The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Stocks gaining even more ground heading into Thanksgiving. The Nasdaq 100 hitting its highest level of the year during the session. The Dow and S&P close to doing the same, but will November's gains yield to pain in December, or is it all clear ahead for the markets? Plus, on the sidelines, NVIDIA sitting out today's broad rally despite a strong earnings report and strength in the rest of the semi space. What it means that this stock isn't coming along for the ride. And later, crude crumbles, Chipotle shares spice up, and Deer digs itself into a hole. The headlines behind those moves and a lot more. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Guy Adami, Steve Grasso, and Stuart Kaiser, head of equity trading strategy at Citi. And we start off with what is turning into a November to remember. Major markets all on pace to log their best month of the year, with the Nasdaq up more than 11% so far. The biggest winners to date, tech, communication services, and consumer discretionary stocks, all up double digits in November. The moves coming amid a sharp decline in rates. The yield on the 10-year dropping from 4.8% at the start of the month to 4.4% now. The benchmark seeing its biggest monthly basis point drop since 2019. So do these trends continue through year end, or are tides set to turn after the holiday? The holiday meaning gobble gobble day, turkey day. Tomorrow, Tim.
Well, a trend for yields, also one of the highest moves higher in yields the month before. But lower yields mean lower risk, at least they have for the market. And if you look at the VIX, the first place I would start is just say VIX is now below 13 and it's down 44% in 20 sessions, where equities are up almost 12%. You outlined how great a month it's been. The semiconductor space, which has had some extraordinary runs over time, has had its best month ever. And that's crazy when you think about it. And what it tells me also is, as great as this is, we've had an incredible run and there may be some complacency again. I don't know if this is bullish. I'm not bearish, but I do think you have a case where the market hasn't really widened out. There isn't a lot of breadth. There's a lot of concentrated trades that are crowded that I think a lot of folks into year end are chasing. So I think we can go higher. But I don't love the setup here. It's been such a great run.
There are mixed signals, too. I mean, you highlighted semiconductors, which had an extraordinary run, but that's cyclical sector's move is not being confirmed by commodities, for instance, Stuart.
Yeah, I think that's right. Look, our view is you're going to be higher into year end. We do expect the leadership of the year to kind of lead us into the end of the close of the year as well. Don't expect PMs to take a whole lot of risk outside of what's worked, this late in the year. And look, if you look at it, lower yields, tighter credit spreads, lower oil, that's all equity positive. It has been narrow leadership, but our view is that narrow leadership is for a reason. The stocks that have won this year are the stocks that are generating earnings. So when you link it back to fundamentals, I think it becomes a little less scary. Our view is continuing to move higher into year-end. Seasonals are strong. You know, hopefully we get what we expect out of a solid jobs number, decent CPI print, Fed on hold, and markets and leadership work into year-end.
Yeah, and Steve Grasso, as I recall, you're still leaning into the Mag 7 here.
Yeah, about a month ago I said, if I had my wish list, I would like for lower rates, lower oil, lower dollar, and we got all of that. So I think that it was about positioning to the downside. It's about positioning to the upside. So I don't think there's a reason to sell the market, but I do think that things are a little expanded to the upside right now. So maybe a little bit of reversion, or maybe a little bit of sideways action into year end. But I am not getting bearish just yet. I think this is really the start of something new.
Guy, I believe you're long term bearish, but shorter term, are you bullish?
Well, I'm bullish on Naugahyde vests. I mean, the thing Tim is wearing is tremendous.
I wish you could come and actually put your hands on it, Guy, because it's not Naugahyde, but it's nice to the touch, isn't it?
It's like wool.
It's pretty remarkable. I mean, leading economic indicators have been drifting lower for the last 18 months. You know, personal savings rate down. I mean, if you listen to a lot of these retailers over the last couple of weeks, they all seem to paint the same picture, yet the market just levitates. And, you know, kudos to everybody on the desk but me, because I think they've all been pretty constructive into year end. Yields moving lower is clearly a factor, but yields are moving lower because things are slowing down. So, you know, I don't really know how to game this out. If you had told me yesterday, Mel, that NVIDIA would be trading in the mid-480s, where's the S&P? I'm like, we're down 50 handles, and here we are. We closed up 15. NASDAQ at levels we last saw, I think, in March of 2022. So it's a pretty remarkable run in the face of some pretty, I think, ominous signs.
You would think, to your point, Guy, that the one stock that symbolizes the really big sector that was a huge catalyst for the markets at the time when the markets really needed a catalyst this year, but that stock trading lower on the back of an okay earnings report, pretty good earnings report, but not knocking the cover off the ball earnings report, would take the stocks lower overall, especially semis.
Well, I think a great earnings report. We all know that it had run 24% into the numbers. We all know where the street is. We know that the buy side was probably a little higher than the sell side on this one. We know that there's nothing about what they said in terms of demand in their core business, and there's nothing what they said in terms of margin that's deteriorated. Really, it's just a sense of, you know, the market's finally caught up. It's kind of figured it out. So NVIDIA down 2.5% today. Semis trade pretty well. I think the things that we have to think about going into year end. First of all, we can all remember markets probably peaked December 1, 2021. 22 was a terrible year, and equal weighted since that point has had a terrible run. But the reason that the market had a terrible 22 and 23 for the rest of the stock market, other than the Mag 7, is because interest rates were going higher. Fed policy was still unknown, how aggressive, still somewhat unknown. Now we come out of the third quarter. We know we've had annualized GDP at 2.9%. I know it's backward looking, but we had jobless claims numbers today. And, you know, what they tell you is the job market's still not that weak. Today's is somewhat of a coincident indicator. I know the labor, you know, numbers often are backward looking. But until the consumer falls out of bed, the economy's not falling out of bed. And this is an environment where I think that just, again, the sequencing and the timeline for absolute reason to be cautious about next year, but it's not now.
Right, and that's sort of your thinking too, right? As long as the consumer's good, as long as the jobs picture looks pretty good, you want to be long the market, but it seems like that turn could happen just like a light switch flipping.
Yeah, 100%. I think if U.S. labor market and services spending is solid, then you want to run long equity risk. I think both NASDAQ and NVIDIA as well highlight really the underlying risk to the market here, which is positioning. I mean, you went into that NVIDIA print at an all-time high, very crowded positioning. Options markets also very, very bullish. And I think it meant even if you beat the consensus number, I think you hit the buy side number largely. And that kind of created a little friction for the stock. If you transpose that to the overall market, what you have really now is the market max long NASDAQ and S&P. Still kind of short Russell. So I don't think we're going lower into year end.
Do you like Russell? Because, I mean, you know, 2 weeks ago, everyone was saying IWM, yeah. But you're finally getting that lift.
It's not our favorite trade sort of 3 to 6 months out. I don't think it has the credit or interest rate risk you want. But tactically over the next month, it is the part of the market that's under-owned right now. And you could see a little bit of a chase there. And related to that is bond market. You know, CTAs are very, very short bonds. So you could really see if positioning really gets stressed here into the end of the year, you're going to see small cap catching up, and you could see yields actually overshoot to the downside as those folks are forced back in.
But you want to be in that crowded side of the boat in terms of large cap tech going into year end.
Yeah,
you're
we
not
do.
Concerned about that?
No, not too much. I think at the beginning of 2024, we have a much different discussion because I think a lot of what's driven leadership, as I mentioned, has been the scarcity of earnings. Our equity strategists next year have a much more broader base to earnings for the S&P 500, and I think that allows like equal weight maybe to catch up because you can find earnings in a lot more places. But into year end, I just don't see PMs kind of going out on a limb here the last month of what's been really a hard year, to be honest with you.
Guy, when does your bearish view come to fruition, if and when it does?
I thought it would be, you know, in the spring of this year, and now we're basically, you know, we're approaching winter, and I'm surprised, you know, that the lag effects haven't kicked in more. But, you know, if you just listen to the commentary you hear out of retailers, and listen, look at, we'll talk about John Deere, I'm sure, but you know, it's across a swath of industries now that are extraordinarily cautious going into next year, but it hasn't manifested itself in the price. And, you know, Carter's talked about this. I agree. A couple things. At a certain point, lower yields is probably going to be detrimental to stocks. I think we're probably on the precipice of that. And that last gap, and Carter talked about earlier this week, on the upside in the S&P was actually filled today. And now there are nothing but gaps on the downside in terms of the S&P chart, which at some point will get filled. So I wish I could answer that. All I'll say is I've been wrong, you know, in terms of timing, but doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
Well, it has to happen. I mean, to me, at some point there is, you know, I feel like part of what 22 was and part of what 23 was really paying for this flood of liquidity and monetary and fiscal policy.
Sorry to interrupt. It has to happen, meaning a recession has to happen, a bigger pullback has to happen.
I think ultimately we pulled forward a lot of demand. Mm-hmm. We pulled forward a lot of consumer spending. Consumer, I think, is working through a lot of that buffer. I think the economy, look, the Fed is targeting the labor market. They don't need to come out and say it. They want to see unemployment north of 5%. That's going to have an impact. How big of an impact? Boy, it would be extraordinary if this Federal Reserve, and I'm not saying that they can't do it, it's just never happened before, was able to execute whatever kind of landing you want to talk about from the greatest monetary experiment of all time. We have no idea. We were saying a decade ago, we had no idea how they were going to take some of that liquidity out of the markets, and then it got worse and worse. So we had kind of the war economy of COVID without all the pain and suffering, and it really led to what has been this tremendous run. It's not over, but I do think we're going to pay the piper, and at some point, we will get there.
Steve, as part of your bullishness, do you see the soft landing, or does it progress into the next stage of the business cycle, meaning a recession of some sort? Or do you think the Fed has achieved what no other Fed has achieved in the history of the Federal Reserve, and that is a soft landing coming out of this rate tightening cycle?
Not through any fault of their own, though. So I think they'll never tell you when they're going to become dovish. The first time you hear that they're dovish is when you hear that they cut rates. They will not lead into it at all. But Melissa, late October, markets fell 10% from near-term highs. This is the second fastest time the market has jumped 10%. And it did it in 16 days. The first fastest time was done in 1998 in 6 days. That tells you something. It's because the consensus was for this never to happen. We're supposed to be in a recession. We're supposed to be falling off a cliff. That hasn't happened. And that's the reason why, until you see people capitulate, that's the reason why the market will go higher. Things in the Middle East are horrific, but they're less horrific than people thought they would be at this stage. China, less horrific. There's a couple of things in this that are less bad. And I think less bad is just enough with rates coming in to have the market push higher.
Is there a piper to be paid eventually, Stuart, when it comes to this hiking campaign?
I mean, hundreds of years of research would say yes. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, Tim makes a great point, which is, you know, our view is stay long while that labor and services spend happens. The second that starts to weaken, you want to get out, and you want to get out quick. And I think you need to be very cautious about reentering.
Is there a magic number?
Imagine number for payrolls or
for payrolls, for unemployment rate, whatever it is.
Look, if you're printing negative payrolls, you need to get out of this market. And to Tim's point, the Fed wants that to happen. So I think you get one or two negative prints, the market's going to look at the Fed and the Fed's going to be patting itself on the shoulder and saying, we finally sort of accomplished this, which is why I think you want to get out and be very careful about getting back in if and when you do see that weakness.
So when we see that, though, we have most of the market. And we were all acknowledging here that already has sold off, that's in a bear market, that's down 20, 30, 40, 50%. Do they have more to price in? Or in other words, would that be a time to just run to, you know, the fixed income market, which has been pretty attractive? Or do you think that the broader part of the market can actually do okay in that environment? Because it's already been pretty ugly outside of this concentrated market.
I mean, I think you could sell off further, honestly. You know, people try to cite the early 1990s recession as this nice, easy, shallow recession. You had 11 consecutive months of job losses and a total 1.6 million jobs lost during that period. Equal weighted S&P is not going to hold in if that's happening, in our view. That's why we'd be cautious in that scenario. And XRT, that equally weighted retail, is how we would hedge that kind of contingent risk.
In that scenario, when the job market starts to weaken and you want to back off equities, what is the Fed doing? Is the Fed remaining restrictive at levels or is it pivoting?
The Fed will pivot. Our view is just they're probably going to pivot a little slower than the market would like them to because they've basically stated they want the labor market to soften. So maybe, let's say in the past they would have gotten dovish after two negative prints. Maybe this time it's three or four. And that window of time, I think, is when equities will be under the most pressure.
Yeah. Steve, do you think that the political cycle plays into any of this?
Yeah, well, first of all, when you talk about oil, you know, I think that we have to actually refill the SPR. So they have a vested interest in us having lower gasoline prices. They have a vested interest. This administration has a vested interest in lowering inflation because people vote with their wallets, right? People vote with their pocketbook. So if people don't feel in good shape, whether it's jobs on the jobs front or in the inflation front, They want change of leadership. So I think I would be wary of things getting extremely negative in an election year. I think the market is probably safe in the first couple of quarters.
Do we need to have yields, Guy, remain where they are or go lower in order for us to have the Santa Claus rally, if you want to call it that?
Yeah, I've been doing. How long have I been doing the show, Melms? If you hear me say that ever, that's time for me to probably time for me to pack my bags. So, look, clearly there's, you know, in the absence of bad news, there's this levitation that typically goes on. I get it. It makes a lot of sense. Unemployment rate is going higher. The problem, of course, is it's not going to go higher in a linear way. I think it's a surprise to people how quickly it does. And if the Fed thinks somehow they can control unemployment the same way they could control inflation, they're just wrong. And I think people will be, you know, I think it's going to happen. 4.5 to 5% is going to be a quick jump. And the market's not going to like that. At a certain point, and Tim was alluding to this, bad news is going to be bad news. And lower rates will suggest that things are slowing in a pretty significant fashion that stocks won't like either.
But that goes to positioning, because if everybody's on one side of the boat in terms of being max bullish on high growth, and this changes, you know, like a light switch in terms of going higher very suddenly, we could really see some messiness out there.
Yeah, we could. And that's going to be a really tricky combination there, right? Because, you know, our view on value growth is you buy what's scarce. What's been scarce this year is growth. If you're going into a recession, growth is still scarce, but it's also what's held. So you're going to have this sort of trade-off between people wanting to be in shorter-term treasuries and in growth stocks because that's where they feel safest versus if they do need to sell positioning, that's what they own. So I think that just creates the potential for a lot of volatility. I think January of 2024 is going to be fascinating. The last 2 years, we've seen these very sort of violent, turbulent Januaries. And in this case, you have very narrow leadership. So if that happens in this time, it's a little extra.
And I think that leadership within that concentrated group is also starting to shuffle. I mean, you can't tell me Apple's going to show you leadership. And I think it's going to be more sympathetic to what the consumer is doing. We've seen a monster run out of Netflix. And again, Netflix continues to print money. They're raising prices. Their content levels are down. So it is fascinating. There will be a January effect. Sorry, Guy. We'll throw another one at you. And I think you're going to have a dynamic here. There's no question there is a chase into year end. And you have, as Steve framed, as we've said, you've got peak inflation, peak rates, peak dollar, essentially peak Fed. And I still think that there are some people that need to own this market. But these have been extraordinary times.
Yep. We turn now to the developing story in Niagara Falls, where a car ran into a checkpoint near the U.S.-Canada border. The governor of New York is giving an update right now. Eamon Javers has got the latest. Eamon.
Melissa, Kathy Hochul is speaking in Niagara Falls, New York at this moment, and she has just said that there is no indication of a terrorist attack in this incident that took place on the Rainbow Bridge just between the United States and Canada. You can see her there addressing reporters. She's also said that 3 out of the 4 bridges between the United States and Canada that had been closed in the wake of this incident have now been reopened. What we know as of this point is that NBC News has obtained exclusive video of the incident itself. And if we play that video, you can see at the very top of your screen, we're going to have to play it here a few times to see, a white sedan is coming into the border area at a very high rate of speed and gets airborne there. Looks like it hits a bollard or some sort of obstruction. And then you can see it goes, you know, 2 or 3 times higher than the vehicles nearby it. That vehicle must have been moving at the point it hit that bollard. We don't know anything about the intent of the people in the car. We do know there are 2 dead here, and those are the occupants of the vehicle. NBC News is also reporting, according to 4 sources familiar, that investigators are looking into whether the driver of the vehicle in question here was in the vicinity of a nearby casino shortly before the car crash. Also saying investigators continue to investigate the scene and the previous route of that vehicle before the video that we're looking at right here, where you see that white sedan just taking off into the air moments before it crashes into the border area, bursts into flame, and then explodes. 2 dead in that vehicle today. Governor of New York now saying, Melissa, no indication of a terrorist attack. Back over to you.
That is good news ahead of the holiday. Eamon, thank you. Eamon Javers. Coming up, NVIDIA's China problem, the chipmaker's earnings blowing away expectations, but it's the China sales warning that has investors losing faith. So could the standout semi stock finally be losing its shine? That's next. Plus, deer caught in the headlights, shares dropping after earnings, but climbing back from its lows of the session. How investors were moving into the company's forecast, mowing into the company's forecast when Fast Money returns.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. NVIDIA shares noticeably sitting out today's rally, falling nearly 2% today, despite posting an earnings beat last night. The chipmaker warning that Q4 sales could take a hit due to China export restrictions. The weakness, though, did not bleed into the broader semi space. The SOX ETF actually ended the day up, and AMD was one of the best performing stocks in both the S&P and NASDAQ 100. Grasso, how are you feeling about the report and the pullback here?
Yeah, so I think the report, as you mentioned earlier, was good on every front. You said it wasn't a blockbuster. It was probably a home run. It wasn't a grand slam. We've been used to grand slams for NVIDIA. So they set the bar pretty high for themselves. The one line was the China worry. So I guess 20 to 25% of their business. But just imagine if there is a workaround or a headline. We saw Biden meet with Xi. And that seemed to work out better than we had thought. So if things start to soften around the edges with China, the stock probably rips higher. The guidance is actually exponentially better than people thought it would be anyway. So even in a worse world, NVIDIA still is probably the best place.
So the commentary specifically on China was very, maybe it's conservative, but the CFO saying that they do not have good visibility into the magnitude of the impact in terms of the export controls in the long-term guy. I mean, it just sounds like they don't have a handle on it. They can't possibly have a handle on it. But if that is the case, and how can investors actually factor in what those China revenues will be?
Yeah, which I think if you look, it's interesting you say that because the knee-jerk reaction when those comments came out was to take the stock, and I saw this print last night, I think down all the way down to 475. So there's clearly some concern around it. And listen, it was a remarkable quarter. We talked about the metrics last night. Christina started the show talking about all the wonderful things. Their margins are off the chart. I mean, obviously, you know, the concern for me at least is, you know, price to revenue, if you look at it, is a staggering number, even given the fact that next year, you're looking at $88 billion or so. It's still a company that's going to trade close to 16 times revenue, which historically is very expensive in that industry. So people will say they'll grow into it. That's fine. They're being handsomely rewarded for it in terms of valuation. And I think to a certain extent, that was some of the consternation around the stock today.
And I think we had a similar conversation last night when I wasn't wearing the vest that Guy's very jealous of. But I think
everybody
what I said,
everybody is that.
Well, look, it's, you know, again, it's Thanksgiving. Let's not be showy. But I think back to NVIDIA and I think about their EPS dynamic, maybe on a price to sales. But if they're going to do $20 a share in 24 and they're going to be at close to 30, 26, 27. There's half the analyst community, and again, you can say what you want about people that have chased the stock. That, you know, at 150, they thought the stock was worth 75. Now they think it's worth 600. But I will say that a lot of the analyst community says this stock is cheap, and they say it's cheap on an EPS basis, and based upon the margin profile of a company that still I think is 6 to 12 months ahead in terms of product line, I think they're going to hold these margins.
All right, there's a lot more fast money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Oh dear. Shares of the industrial giant getting moved down despite crushing earnings. Why the new year may not bring good tidings for this company. Plus, a make or break moment for oil as OPEC delays a key meeting. The impact on the energy space and what it could mean for your wallet. You're watching Fast Money live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Deere shares dropping after the industrial company issued disappointing full-year 2024 guidance before the bell this morning. The results sending fellow industrial titan Caterpillar lower as well. There are all sorts of concerns about what these companies do when sales fall. Will they lease more as they have in the past, Guy? And how will leasing impact their portfolio?
So it's interesting you say it. So, you know, they appear to be cheap on valuation, and that's typically a warning sign. You know, Tim can speak to that, but you know, out of the three major business segments for next year, 2024, the guiding net sales in production and precision ag down 15 to 20%, small ag and turf down 10 to 15%, construction and forestry down 10%. And I think the revenue guidance was $8 billion. I think the street was at $9.5 billion. So that's a bit of a warning sign. And now you're talking about probably dealer inventories growing, which is going to hurt margins. These things sort of cascade. And look, I understand that Deere's not the economy. I totally get it. Look at a chart. It's had trouble over the last couple of years, three times around the $440 level. It's going to find a home probably in the 325 to 340 range. But again, it's part of that overall narrative about things slowing down, Melissa.
Yeah, you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, durable goods orders were a little bit light today as well. I think it kind of like, you know, gets caught up in that same narrative. What's interesting is the narrative has been the manufacturing side of the economy is recovering out of what looked like recessionary conditions in the front half. So I think the question with these numbers is, do these numbers just reflect that, or is it something a little more worrisome kind of going out into 24?
Small ag and turf, by the way, that's me on my John Deere lawn tractor.
Maybe not
wearing this vest because it's too nice for that. But I do like the problem with Deere's numbers today is everybody knew that their guidance was going to be down. The problem is it was down 15% to where the street was, and there's decremental margin dynamics. So, Guy hit it. I mean, the numbers to the multiple aren't terrible. On a trailing basis, this was 11 times. It's really attractive. But as you bring down those earnings, and again, those earnings are going to come down remarkably, this becomes 15 times, you know, on a forward, which is a total different story.
Yeah. Value trade or value trap, Grasso?
Yeah, I think it's a value trap. It's down 13% year to date or thereabouts. The only thing bullish that you see is that the farm bill, which is, I guess, voted on every 5 years, was extended through September 2024. The bulk of that is not going to a John Deere, but there are subsidies in that. There are subsidies for farmers. So maybe you see some of that as a tailwind. I think to your question, I think it's more of a value trap now. You have to see it perform before I would jump into a name that's been under pressure like that.
All right, coming up, crude prices sliding this month. Will the OPEC meeting that's been delayed to next week play a big role in where prices head next? Gas Buddy's Patrick DeHaan will join us after the break to lay out the make or break moment for oil and any pain you can expect at the pump. Don't go anywhere. Fast Money's back in two.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks in the green heading into Thanksgiving. The Dow up nearly 200 points. The S&P and NASDAQ both jumping about 0.4%. All three indices on pace for their fourth positive week in a row. And shares of Tesla dropping nearly 3% today. New York City's comptroller calling on the company's board to take action on CEO Elon Musk after he endorsed anti-Semitic posts on X. NYC's retirement system owns nearly $1 billion worth of Tesla shares. Grasso, we're seeing a little bit of a pressure. How big of an issue do you think this is for the stock?
You know, he seems to always be made of Teflon. I'd rather, you know, not pass judgment until you hear both parties and everything. And I think in our world of instant social justice, everyone runs to make their own verdict immediately. Obviously, it's rolling out. The stock has Elon Musk to worry about, not what Tesla has to worry about. So I think it's more about the person, not about the stock. Tesla still has fortified its spot as the lead of the pack in the EV community. It's number one, and charging is going to be probably another $5 billion of revenue potentially for them because everyone has signed on to their standards. So there's a host of levers that he could still pull, but it's more of the man not the company that's causing the headwind.
So is Elon Musk more of a positive or a negative for the stock, Guy? And I guess put it a different way, if he announced tomorrow that he was leaving the company, what would the stock do?
That's a great question. You know, probably go lower. I think it's still key person risk in terms of the seat that he sits in, despite the fact that he can't seem to help himself in terms of some of the things that come out of his mouth or through the keyboard. But, you know, I'll push back a little and say pension funds, people that own these stocks in terms of these pension funds, large endowments, I think, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, are going to be under tremendous pressure to potentially have to get out of these shares. And you're starting to see it around the edges. And look, despite the fact that the stock rallied from 103 to 300 and everybody sort of focuses on that, this stock has entirely underperformed the NASDAQ since November, December of 2021, down probably close to 40% or so. And the NASDAQ, by the way, today, which made a 52-week high. So there's clearly something going on with Tesla, the stock.
All right. A volatile day for oil. Prices tumbling as much as 5% earlier in the day after OPEC and its allies delayed its next meeting by 4 days to next Thursday, November 30th. Oil recouping a lot of the losses, but was still down for the day. The commodity now on track for its fifth weekly loss in a row. It would be oil's longest losing streak since December 2021. And one energy expert suggests the market is at a near-term make-or-break moment. Patrick DeHaan is the head of petroleum analysis at GasBuddy. Patrick, great to have you with us. There have been reports that they are delaying this meeting because not only are they going to be discussing deeper cuts, but they'll also be discussing actually enforcing the prior cuts. OPEC always has a bad rap in terms of, you know, saying that they're going to cut, but then there's no enforcement of those cuts. So is that why this could really be that make or break moment for oil?
Well, Melissa, I think there's a lot of pressure right now. The Saudis are wrangling all the OPEC members up and trying to get them on the page of cutting production. That is certainly something that we've seen the Saudis hinting at the market every turn of the last 6 to 8 months. They've been hinting that they wanted oil prices higher. And now look, afford a potentially 5 week slide in the price of oil. It's clear that not everyone at OPEC is thinking the same way. And African countries like Nigeria, Angola are certainly lashing out against the pushback that they're feeling from the Saudis at the Saudis' desire for everyone to cut. And, you know, the impact to the pump has certainly been very notable as gas prices now declined to $3.25 a gallon, the lowest Thanksgiving since Thanksgiving of 2020. Americans benefiting from the lower oil prices just in time for Thanksgiving. But the make or break moment is how much lower is oil going to go if OPEC does not act here at their meeting now next week.
Patrick, it's Tim. Thanks for joining us. I agree that OPEC compliance isn't great, but Saudi Arabia essentially and OPEC actions tend to be very forward looking in terms of their outcome. And they've had a lot of success in the last, I would argue, 3 years in having the impact that they need. And if Saudi's willing to go this route, and I think they are, I guess I get back to, though, the supply dynamic, because everyone focuses on demand. And to me, I still think it's all about supply, which means OPEC controls it. And I don't see a whole lot of new supply. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is some new supply. Look at the Biden administration and how they've tried to make friends with Venezuela, who's now promising democratic elections. And so there's a more stake to the game here in that if OPEC continues to cut market share, it's going to continue to give countries like Guinea and Venezuela potentially more output. And so that's kind of the void here, is how long is OPEC going to cut back, allowing countries like the U.S. now, we're at 13.2 million barrels a day. How long are they going to keep the door open for other competitors to take their market share? So there's a lot of pressures here, and we're seeing some of those African producers that are also upset that they don't get more production out of the quotas. But I mean, to your point, compliance has always been very difficult, just as we're now finding diplomacy and getting everyone on the same page is very difficult as well.
Your forecast is 6 to 12 months on oil is 65 to 95, which seems like a very wide range, Patrick. And I'm wondering what the scenarios are for 65 versus 95. It seems like 95, you can imagine we were there before, but 65 we haven't seen for a while. Is that a severe economic slowdown? I mean, that has to be factored in. What drives it to 65?
Yeah, you know, it's a severe economic slowdown coupled with the fact that the Chinese economy still isn't in drive, so to speak. And so the Chinese have been filling up inventories. So I think there are some weaknesses. I mean, as Citibank has called out, there are some technical weaknesses here still to oil. And look at Russia, still quotas and compliance being an issue. I could see that being a problem that gets away from OPEC here if they fail to bring in compliance. So all in all, there is a wide range. Certainly geopolitical issues could continue. The Russian war in Ukraine is fizzling out. Risk is reducing there. All in all, Americans are the primary beneficiaries of these lower prices. But keep in mind, even gasoline demand has struggled, even against gasoline prices that are dropping to $3.25 a gallon. Gas, but you saw demand last week at just 8.5 million barrels a day. That's pretty weak going into Thanksgiving.
All right, Patrick, thanks for your analysis. Appreciate it. Patrick DeHaan
of
Gas Buddy. Stuart, you know, it's interesting, in the latest FOMC minutes, they're talking about the consumer having a lot more firepower than had been anticipated, saying that they have more money than they originally thought, which seems weird, but maybe not, given the decline that we've seen in oil prices.
Yeah, look, I think it definitely helps the consumer. But I think if you're Saudis right now and you've got, you know, basically oil at its lows or close to it, U.S. producing over 13 million barrels per day, you've had two wars going on in oil producing regions, and you've cut production multiple times, and you can't seem to get that oil price higher, you have to assume that that's starting to kind of create a little friction within OPEC. So, yeah, I agree. It's positive for the U.S. consumer, and I think it makes this OPEC meeting, you know, pretty important. We liked owning upside in oil going into this meeting when we thought it was this Sunday. So we're going to kind of roll that forward a week. And just if you look at the balance of risks, it seems like, you know, they might need to do something here, just given the fact pattern.
It's fascinating that they moved this meeting. It's fascinating to me because historically this Thanksgiving meeting at OPEC has had some fireworks around it. They've done some significant stuff while seemingly some of their biggest consumers were digesting. And so, I actually think there's a risk for a surprise cut. I think the market has zero expectation of that. I think back to the energy equities, it's obviously not been a great run. I think, you know, we get back to companies that I think have different dynamics. We've seen the M&A activity in the mega cap space. I think some of that will continue. I think the strong get stronger. I don't think you have to go too far afield to build a nice little basket, you know, that could be a Chevron, a Schlumberger, and an energy transfer, all names I'm long, and names that I think are really high quality, regardless of where the oil price is.
Or the two O's and Mojo guy, yes. Your acronym for 2023.
Yeah, and the O's are interchangeable, as
which
you know.
Ones? Which ones?
Interchangeable.
Well,
yeah.
Well, not the mentalist O's, who, by the way, it's been all over the place. I think it was on Jim's show. Now, look, I'll say this. You know, Exxon made that, you know, acquisition for a reason, or trying to. Chevron, the same thing. Warren Buffett owning 25% of Oxy for a reason. You listen to Halima Croft, you listen to Paul Sankey, both think there's still tremendous upside in the commodity. I agree. I'm surprised we're here, clearly, but I'm with Tim on this one. I think there's going to be a very much surprise cut out of OPEC. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be sort of galvanized in their want to get prices higher. And, you know, it's hard to blame them, quite frankly.
The O's, in case people don't know, in Guy's Mojo are OIH and Oxy, and they are interchangeable.
Oh, I thought we were talking about O's.
No, not the mentalist.
Who baffled us on this set. He was amazing one night.
Coming up, Feasting on Eats, the restaurant ETF is on a tear this month. We'll have more on what that move says about the names in the space. And gobble, gobble, it is almost Thanksgiving. So we are asking the traders for the stock they are feasting on and the one that has been a real turkey. Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got a nice appetizer before tomorrow's big Thanksgiving feast. Maybe a muse-bouche kind of thing. The Eats restaurant ETF, ticker nice. EATZ, heading higher and adding to an already impressive month, up more than 12% in November. Today's move thanks in part to Chipotle shares hitting another record high, the stock at its highest level since its IPO in 2006, up nearly 60%. This year, it has been, shall I say.
Yes, you can say it. You can say
burrito
it.
Burrito blowout for this stock.
You got to ask Guy,
year.
Obviously, what
Guy.
He thinks.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, Melissa, historically, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving has been a huge night for CMG, and it's obviously showing itself today, making an all-time high. And again, people will criticize it on valuation, and I get it. It's expensive. Right now, RSIs are probably at levels that we haven't seen in a while in terms of overbought, but this stock has a way of working both those off, and I think, you know, you short it at your own peril. I'll say this. I think we're probably within a few months of them coming out, and I know the math, but, you know, some sort of split that will get everybody excited. This is one of those stocks that Brian Kelly used to say, put in your desk and forget about. Well, CMG is one. Now, with that said, it's hard to forget about the aftermath for me after I have that burrito, but that's probably for another show.
Top drawer is what Brian Kelly was talking about. Put it in your top drawer. and forget about it. Coming up, a Thanksgiving roundup. We are going around the Trader dinner table to pick the names we are most thankful for this season. You might be in a few. First, be in for a few surprises. That's next. Welcome back to Fast Money. It is Thanksgiving Eve. The table is set. The turkey is going to go into the oven shortly. But before we get to the feast, we wanted to ask our traders for the one name or sector they are thankful for on this holiday. So, Tim, Ovested One, start us off.
I'm thankful for higher yields. I'm thankful for fixed income. I'm thankful for asset allocation that now really makes sense. I'm thankful for not having to be, yeah, that's a great sound effect. And it's ultimately not having to be pushed into higher risk stuff. First of all, there are real yields again, and there's an opportunity to invest, whether it's corporates, whether it's munis, whether it's converts. There's a whole slew of opportunities. And I think for investors who have to live on fixed income, they are thankful for this too, because it's been financial depression for a long time.
Steve Grasso, what are you thankful for?
Grayscale Ethereum Trust. It is up 255% year to date. Obviously, you know the story behind this. They're waiting on approval to become an ETF, along with a whole list of others that want that ETF status as well. I think this goes much higher, but this has been very good for me. I am thankful for Ethereum Grayscale Trust.
Stuart, what are you grateful for?
If you're a U.S. equity investor, it's got to be large cap tech at this point. I mean, it's driven 80% of the returns year to date. It's driven upside surprises to earnings. And, you know, I think if you're being thankful for anything at this point, it's NASDAQ up 40% plus year to date and those companies being able to just drive earnings growth well above what anybody would have expected.
And Guy.
I'm thankful that I'm the last person that has to hear that stupid bird chirp. But
yeah,
you can play it now.
That.
But I'm also thankful for Eli Lilly. We've been pretty steadfast for the last 4 years. I mean, Eli Lilly was a $100 stock. Nobody's talking about it. We haven't really moved that far off it. And as we're sitting here today, it's within, you know, whisper of an all-time high. Eli Lilly is what I'm thankful for, Melms.
All right. So now that we know your favorites, what are you liking the least this holiday? What is your big turkey? Guy, what's your big turkey?
Can't wait to hear this sound. Target has gotten off the mat, clearly off that last quarter, but I think this bounce is going to be somewhat short-lived. Can you do that again? That actually sort of like
that. I can do that again.
I want to know who on our team came up with that sound effect. Somebody did. Someone created that. Some human.
Is it a real bird, or is that a person imitating a bird? That's what I want to know.
That's a human turkey sound, I think.
Anyway, Guy, Lily.
Yeah. No, Lily's the bird chirp, Target's the gobble-gobble to the downside. I think this bounce in Target's going to be short-lived.
Stuart, what's your turkey?
I think it has to be U.S. banks, U.S. bank stocks. You know, held to maturity losses, rising deposit costs, huge capital needs, quiet deal calendar, plus the only real crisis we've had all year. So I think the banking sector has probably been the biggest disappointment for a lot of folks, especially with yields rising and the yield curve steepening, and they still haven't been able to catch a bid.
Yeah. Tim?
Dollar Gen is my turkey. Oh. It's down 43% on the year, but that's not the reason it's a turkey. They've revised earnings down three times already in the third quarter. They brought back their old CEO after bringing in a new CEO. Disinflation could be leading to deflation, and I think they may have more negative trends ahead.
Guy, at one point in time, Dollar Gen and the dollar stores in general would have been ones that you would have been thankful for, and then they quickly turned turkey this year.
100, and when people were trading down to the dollar stores, it made a lot of sense. Now people are trading down from the dollar stores, which is, again, reason for concern going forward.
Yeah, and Steve, your turkey.
It's Rivian. Rivian is definitely the second best EV company out there, but their cash burn continues to disappoint. They and just a little bit anecdotally, when you go to order or pre-order a Rivian, they charge you $1,000 for a pre-order. No one's going to slap it down, even though it's totally refundable. When you go to Tesla, they charge you $100 to pre-order the Cybertruck. The management team seems to be absent, and that is my turkey for the year, Rivian.
By the way, we have some developing story here. That turkey sound effect is Dan Money, who is a member of our Fast Money team
so
back
talented.
In Englewood Cliffs. Very talented.
So talented.
He's very good at video, and he's very good with sound effects, particularly birds that will be
consumed. Maybe next year we get him live doing that. Just watch him. It'd be kind of
on
fun.
Demand.
Yeah.
We'll consider it. Up next, final trades. Final Trade Time, Steve Grasso.
Tapestry, the stock fell off a cliff after announcing the Capri deal, but it seems to be bottoming out right now. It's up 9% in 1 month. I think it trades up about 20% near term.
Guy Adami.
Always thankful for you, Mel, our Fast Money family and viewers. Oxy, OXY.
Ditto. Stuart Kaiser, Citi.
We like TLT to the upside. I think there's room for rates to move lower.
Timothy.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving, Mel. Energy Transfer, happy for that one, too. Yield, portfolio of assets, diversified.
Nice vest.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching Fast Money. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody out there. Enjoy your loved ones. Be safe. Stay where you are. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.